2-2 pitch. A swing and a long drive. Deep left. Way back. Gone.
All right. Welcome back to another episode of the Baseball America Fantasy Podcast. This is your host, Jeff Ponce. Alongside me, as always, is my co-host up in the Great White North, the fighting city of Toronto. That would be Dylan White, former NFBC main event co-champion. Haven't said that in a while, Dylan. Wanted to break it back out. What's going on, man?
That's because it's old. It's all ancient history. Not bad. It's snowing here. First time in a while. It's cold, slushy, starting to melt. So pretty gross, but things are doing well. The hot stove is warm, which is keeping me warm up here in Toronto.
Yeah, we got the winter meetings just kind of ended, I think, this evening. So some big deals. We'll be talking about those. Of course, we had the Rule 5 draft as well. We're not going to get into any Rule 5 stuff because we actually had a breakdown podcast that came out right after the Rule 5. So you can go back and listen to that. It should be the podcast above this one in the Baseball America podcast feed. We can also maybe talk about them in a couple of weeks, because we'll be through our positional rankings. We're going to be talking shortstops today. But before we get into that, Dylan, let's talk about some of the news, some of the happenings. I think this is the biggest deal that's dropped thus far. And that would be Pete Alonso signs with the Orioles for 5 years, $155 million. Good player. Good move for the Orioles offense. Bad for Coby Mayo and some of the other guys in that lineup. But at the same time, it's a lot of money in a lot of years for an older first baseman. This could age pretty poorly. What are your thoughts on this, I guess, in a vacuum for 2026 and then going forward from a dynasty perspective? Do you like the fit or not?
I don't think it matters when you have power like Alonso has. He had 53 home runs or something like that and 46 last year or something. I don't know, something ridiculous. So it doesn't really matter what park it is. It doesn't matter if the park has the left field fences moved back. He'll be a power hitter. It's a bit surprising to spend so much money on a, right-handed hitting first baseman. Like you said, they don't age that well. Usually it's 0.5 war per year, but first baseman DH types, it's 0.7 war is kind of the aging curve. So he was he's 3.5, I think, projected this year. So that's going to drop, or maybe 3, and it's going to drop pretty quickly. So, these long-term deals, it's always like that. The first 3, the first 60% of the deal is above water, and then it gets underwater quick. So I think it's good. I think it's good for the Orioles. They traded for Taylor Ward. They got Pete Alonso. They're pushing in. I kind of like that for baseball. I don't like that for the Blue Jays and the AL East, just making it a bit tougher. But
they can't sign everybody, Dylan. Come on.
That is true. So no, it's good. I think it's good. I like that the market's robust. I like it's robust for these types that kind of, the CJ Crons and all that. They weren't getting any money, and then now it's kind of Pete Alonso is getting huge money. Obviously, it's a different player, different stratosphere, but
a little different.
I think it's good. I think it's good whenever people are spending, and especially when there's a collective bargaining thing on the horizon and they're still spending. I think it's encouraging.
I think that is encouraging as well. And speaking of spending, the Phillies went out and they bring back Kyle Schwarber on a pretty big deal as well. Obviously, these are probably two of the premier home run hitters in the game. When you talk just about the home run hitting abilities, Schwarber's been the top guy the last handful of years. How do you expect this to age? Because some of these DH type players can age fairly well. The aging curve can slow down a little bit because they are just hitting. And if they're bigger, stronger guys like this, I'm not so concerned about bat speed going away or just, atrophying at a quick rate or them falling off the table. By the end of this deal, it may not be great, but just 2026 value and then going forward. So how are you viewing this move of Schwarber going back to Philadelphia?
Yeah, it's pretty much similar comment about Alonso. This is a DH and they're spending, $30 million per year. And this is the DH that had 5 war last year, which is pretty impressive, but 56 home runs, 132 RBIs, 365 OBP, 152 WRC+. Very good. He's projected for 3 WAR, which is pretty impressive considering he's a DH. Like, it's all bad, obviously. And there's a huge adjustment down. So to hit 3 WAR as a DH is pretty impressive. So I think it's going to age pretty much like the Alonso, but maybe a bit slower, like you said, because he's DHing, so he's not in the field. He doesn't have the wear and tear. He might have like a David Ortiz type of longevity. He's projected 45 home runs, 133 WRC plus according to Steamer. So, I mean, even in 3 years, like, he's still going to be an above average hitter with like 30 home runs per year. So I think it doesn't really change his value at all. Same idea as Alonso. No park's going to contain him. So it doesn't really matter where he signs. It's a known commodity in Philadelphia. So I think like his value and Pete Alonso's value in the dynasty question is basically the same.
Yeah, I would agree. Yeah, I think obviously with Schwarber, it doesn't, you know, concern me. Even like that 3-year window, I think with both of these guys, I'm pretty comfortable. Like, you know what you're going to get. More comfortable with Schwarber than I am with Alonso, just in terms of like what I think he's going to provide, the home runs, like all that sort of thing. You know, Alonso's fluctuations in batting average from year to year are a little bit tricky. All right. They're ruining baseball, Dylan. This is the time to complain about the Dodgers. They signed Edwin Diaz. He leaves the Mets after they sign Devin Williams. We talked about that in last week's show. What are your thoughts on Edwin Diaz going to the Dodgers? This is obviously, you know, one of the more established closers in the game. The Dodgers have been searching for that closer. They've done a lot well, right, over the years. They've won back-to-back World Series. They've been a tremendous organization top to bottom. They haven't really had a stable closer since Kenley Jensen was at his peak. So what are your thoughts on Edwin Diaz going to the Dodgers? Do you think this will work? Is the long search over? It's like Browns quarterbacks. I know you're Canadian, so you may not get that. They've had a lot.
I mean, the Dodgers had a tough time last year in the ninth. Like, Tanner Scott, much maligned Tanner Scott. Blake Treinen was pretty bad. Evan Phillips was on the DIL, and Kirby Yates wasn't very effective. And Vesia was injured as well, and had some other stuff going on. So I think very good for the Dodgers. I mean, when you sign Edwin Diaz, it's going to improve your club. He has like the third highest WAR of the last 5 years as a reliever. And he missed a whole season. So it's pretty impressive what he's done. It just lights out. Let's see here. His major league career K per nine is 14.5. His career ERA is 2.82, and all his peripherals are even below that. So he's only 32. For a 3-year deal, it's gonna be lights out. So I mean, this is not good for the Tanner Scotts. It's not good for Roki Sasaki owners who thought that maybe he might be the closer. But maybe it's good that he's going to move back to the rotation. But, you know, the rich keep getting richer. And I wonder what it feels like to be a Mets fan losing Edwin and Alonso, who are probably two of your favorite players if you're a Mets fan, other than like Lindor. But yeah, you're losing kind of the heart and soul of the club. I wonder how it feels right now.
Yeah, well, you know, they got some good players still. I think they'll be fine. I think that organization's going to be okay. All right, Dylan, we just ran through some of the news and notes. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back on the other side, we're going to talk about these very loaded shortstop rankings. All right, Dylan, you ready?
I'm ready.
We'll be right back.
Holiday season is upon us, and if you're still searching for gifts, don't panic. Uncommon Goods makes holiday shopping stress-free and joyful with thousands of one-of-a-kind gifts you can't find anywhere else. You'll discover presents that feel meaningful and personal, never rushed or last minute. Uncommon Goods looks for products that are high quality, unique, and often handmade or made in the U.S. Many are crafted by independent artists and small businesses, so every gift feels special and thoughtfully chosen, like the MLB Perfect Catch coaster set, which can turn any table into a home run display. Uncommon Goods has something for everyone and every occasion. From moms and dads to kids and teens, from birthdays to the holidays to anniversaries, you'll find unforgettable gifts that are anything but ordinary. When you shop at Uncommon Goods, you're supporting artists and small independent businesses. Every purchase is a chance to choose something remarkable and feel good about where your money goes. With every purchase you make at Uncommon Goods, they give back $1 to a nonprofit partner of your choice. They've donated more than $3.1 million to date. So don't wait. Make this holiday the year you give something truly unforgettable. To get 15% off your next gift, go to uncommongoods.com/BA2022. That's uncommongoods.com/BA2022 for 15% off. Don't miss out on this limited time offer. Uncommon Goods. We're all out of the ordinary.
All right, and we are back. Dylan, shortstop rankings, top 60 overall, one of the deepest positions in fantasy. I think especially because you have sort of like this feeder system to a variety of other positions, mostly throughout the infield, sometimes in the outfield as well. But most of your very, very, very talented, tooled up prospects come into the game as shortstops. They'll move to third base. They'll move to second base. Some move all the way down the spectrum like a Ryan Mountcastle to first base or into the outfield. So this is a very loaded group, very talented group, super talented at the top. Let's start with number one, Bobby Witt Jr. In my opinion, this guy stands alone in his own tier, one of the elite players in fantasy. Potential number one overall type of pick. What are your thoughts in terms of Bobby Witt Jr. versus some of the other top names in the game, and how does he lay out if, you know, you're starting a dynasty team today?
Well, we have him third, and I could see him maybe even being number one ahead of Ohtani, depending how, you know, your roster situation is, because maybe you don't get the flex of Ohtani a pitcher, or you don't want to clog up your utility spot. But I mean, Bobby Witt is elite material, power, speed, batting average, even OBP. He's got the fastest sprint speed in the majors. He's got the most range at shortstop. So like his floor and his fantasy floor is so high. He's not old. He's in his mid-20s. So like he's just going to lock down your position in your roster and the Royals for you know, 5 to 10 years. Comfortably kind of at superstar status. So, I mean, he's being taken in redraft in like the top three spots. It's like Ohtani, Judge, Witt. I've seen Witt was at number two for a while. Judge has passed him now, but that's probably more a testament to the rest of the shortstop class in 2026 than a comment on Witt.
Yeah. And I think, you know, he is the best combination of power, speed, counting stats, hitting ability, you know, sort of in the game. It's obviously it's him and Ohtani. He's shortstop eligible, middle infield eligible. You know, that's a little bit more versatile. I understand in many of your leagues, you're able to use Ohtani as a pitcher. Whether you're able to use him as a hitter and a pitcher on the same day is a whole other conversation. More often than not, you can't. So that takes away a little bit of that versatility. I understand that conversation 100%. Number two and number three, I think, are kind of their own tier, that B level, we'll say, or A minus level in terms of dynasty players. One is Ellie De La Cruz, who I have, you can see his glove right behind my head, and Gunnar Henderson. Two very young players that have had success at the major league level. Gunnar's been a little bit more, I'll say, consistent from game to game, at bat to at bat. The upside with Ellie, though, is as high as anybody, maybe even as high as Bobby Witt Jr. if it all sort of clicks. But there are some real hit tool concerns. So for you, why Ellie De La Cruz over Gunnar Henderson?
I probably prefer Gunnar as a like a player I'd want to build around. But Ellie, because he, you know, he stole 67 bases, not last year, but the year before, like that's huge in fantasy. So it's just, he has the huge upside in fantasy. Like you said about the hit tool concerns, you know, he had a 31% strikeout rate in that year. He stole 67. Last year, he cut that down to 26%. So that's pretty good, but his WRC pluses are kind of like 110 to 120. So, you know, there's not that much room to go down before you're an average hitter. He's an average hitter. Meanwhile, Gunnar, his major league career average is 132. He had a 120 last year in a kind of a down year, but he had 154 the year before in his age 23 season when he got 8 WAR. So he's got huge upside too, kind of like from a real life point of view. He just doesn't have the like 75 stolen base potential. So, I mean, we have them back to back in the rankings. Number two, number three, obviously in shortstops, but like 6 and 7 in the overall ranking. So it's kind of like pick the guy you want to build around. I understand the arguments for both.
Yeah. I think it's a good question because I could lean either way. I think I actually have Ellie on more of my dynasty teams than I do Gunner, or it might even be even. But these are two guys that, you know, I definitely seek out as my shortstop. But I think, you know, we haven't seen the best of either. I think there is a potential 40 home run, like 15 to 20 steal season in Gunnar Henderson's bat. I think there's a chance for like a 40-50 season with Ellie, especially in that ballpark, if the hit tool just improves incrementally over the next couple of years or takes a big jump going into 2026. Just a little more contact, a little more plate approach from either side. And I mean, him making more contact is just naturally going to lead to more home runs and a lot more exciting plays because of all the things that he can do in a baseball field. But Dylan, we're going to ask a great question now. Mm-hmm. How good is prospect Connor Griffin? We have him ranked number 4 overall amongst these 60 shortstops. Our number one prospect in the game, somebody I've seen play multiple times throughout the season, kind of at the very beginning in spring training and at the very end with his last games when he was eliminated with Altoona in the Double A Eastern League playoffs. Kind of has it all, Dylan. There aren't a lot of prospects that come along that you cover that you can kind of look at a player and say, him being an all-star a few times would almost be a disappointment. And I know that's a lot of lofty expectations to put in a teenager, somebody who's going to be 20 years old in next season. But I think when you watch Connor Griffin play, just the maturity in terms of the game, the maturity from and the consistency from at bat to at bat, the contact ability, kind of the understanding of the strike zone and the discerning eye, and just, you know, the natural feel for hitting, of just knowing when to be aggressive, what types of pitches to be aggressive on, and the type of stuff to lay off of. He's big and strong and projectable. There's probably even more strength coming into that big frame. He's super athletic and twitchy. The exit velocity data is tremendous. The underlying plate skill data is very, very good. Good bat to ball skills. Doesn't have an outrageous chase rate or anything along those lines, but I would say is aggressive enough. You know, not overly passive. Somebody that doesn't let an opportunity to put something into the outfield and to do that. Really versatile defender, of course, is a double plus runner and someone that stole 50 bases. In his professional debut. I mean, this guy put up historic numbers his first time playing professional baseball. And I think there's even more swing tweaks that could unlock more power and more consistent backspin. He's not a finished product. I think this is exciting as any of these guys we're talking about, Bobby Witt Jr., you know, the Acuñas, the Tatises, those kind of guys. I think within a year or two, we could be talking about him in the same breath and could be going within the first round, early second round in redrafts in a year or two. That's the kind of player that I think we're talking about here with Connor Griffin. I don't know if you agree or disagree with my hyperbole there, but I don't think it is. I really think this is, you know, since I've been here, our number one prospects have been, you know, it was a kind of a trio year with Adley, Julio, and Bobby Witt Jr. I think those guys were all number one caliber prospects, and we said it at the time. Gunnar Henderson and Connor, Corbin Carroll, Roman Anthony, you know, other guys that have kind of been number ones at certain point. James Wood was one of them. These are all pretty big young stars in the game. Jackson Churio, all guys that got big contracts and have performed at the major league level very, very young. You know, I think he might be as good, if not better than all of them, at least as a prospect in his first year. if he ends up with a similar type of trajectory to Bobby Witt Jr., I think he'd be pretty satisfied with that, just in terms of how great Bobby Witt is. We just talked about that. But I think that's what the ceiling is here. The ceiling is here that this guy could unseat Bobby Witt Jr. in a couple of years. Now I'll kick it over to you. So what are your thoughts on that with Connor Griffin and how good he is?
I mean, I think you said it all. He is next Ellie De La Cruz, next Bobby Witt. The question is, when is he going to be the full-time player for the Pirates? There was talk that, you know, maybe they'd extend him. He's going to compete for the role, the starting role. But, you know, they may kind of slow play him too. I don't know. So just to talk about how he's going in redraft. So Bobby Witt, like I said, is kind of going, you know, in the top five. Ellie De La Cruz in this latest DC I'm in went number 8. Gunner went at the back of the first round, beginning of the second. He's like at 16. And obviously that's where Connor Griffin can go if he actualizes all the hype that we're talking about. He's been going in like the 19th, 20th round in redraft. Brian Slack and I, who I co-manage these DCs with, we had them in on him at like 14-4, like the 14th round. In this draft that I'm in right now, we went in the 12th. So he's creeping up. Rob Silver was on James Anderson's podcast and was basically waxing poetic about him. So you're going to see him creep up. And like the 12th round is like where Dansby Swanson's going, Ozzy Albies, Brandon Lau. So like these are producers in fantasy, and you're betting on the upside that Connor Griffin can bring, with the possible downside that he's not even up until, say, August. I don't think that's likely, but, you know, there is that possibility. Or he comes up and he struggles. So I think that's a testament to, you know, his potential, even in 2026. And since he's so young and he's so athletic, he's got a huge career ahead of him.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, let's move on to the next one. This was a fun one in our rankings. I want to give us a little bit of credit here, Dylan. Going into last year, we took some flack for how high we ranked Zach Nato in our overall top 500 and in our shortstop rankings. I think he was inside the top 50 overall. That proved to be a pretty smart move. You went a step further this year. Nito over Lindor, man, are you crazy? Explain yourself to the people out there. The reeling Mets fans that, you know, your heart was bleeding for before. Now you're stabbing them in the back. Nito over Lindor. Should we make a trade here? Come on, Steve. Get somebody on the phone.
I think that the gist is you're getting 25-25 production as kind of a median floor. Lindor has averaged like 30-30 the last 3 years. So obviously he's been producing for such a long time. He's got the track record, obviously. The difference is the age. Like Neto is heading into his age 25 season. So he's 25-25 now, 25 homers, 25 stolen bases now, and ascending into his prime. Lindor is in his 30s doing, say, 25-25, just for the sake of argument. And he's heading into his age 32 season, so he's going to decline. So it's kind of crossing over. Lindor's probably better this year than Neto, and maybe even next year. But, you know, in a dynasty league, it's 3-year window, 5-year window, it's a dynasty. So I leaned age there. I could easily see Lindor being the pick you want, but, you know, I'm a Neto guy, so I like it.
I appreciate that. I appreciate you stumping for your guy with Zach Nato. You know, I think it makes a lot of sense. All right, this is an interesting ranking as well. We have CJ Abrams at 7. Then we have JJ Weatherholt ahead of Trey Turner, Mookie Betts, and Corey Seager. Some luminaries at the position. Are those guys finally sort of beginning to fade? And are any of those guys fades for you in Dynasty this year, Dylan?
I think I have Mookie as my fade. He just hasn't been good the last couple of years. I mean, this is purely an age and fantasy thing. CJ Abrams is, you know, 25 years old, goes like 20-30, Like I said, with Neto, he's like ascending in his prime. His age curves are kind of heading up. So like you're going to get this theoretically for, you know, a few years. Trey Turner is in his 30s. Mookie Betts is in his 30s. Corey Seager in his 30s and doesn't give you speed. He gives you everything else. So it's kind of like if you're competing now, you'll probably want the Turners and the Bettses and the Seagers. If you're doing a startup, you probably want Weatherholt or CJ Abrams. So it's kind of, again, that thing where the aging curves are crossing. It's always the fun part of Dynasty, trying to figure out when to get out from the veterans, or when you can maybe pluck a veteran who still has a few years. Like Trey Turner and Mookie Betts are still going to be productive guys for 3 years. No question, but there may be Dynasty managers who have them and are scared that, you know, Trey Turner, he's 32, he's not going to steal the bases that he stole. But I mean, he still has sprint speed near the top. So maybe you can exploit these managers by having them be scared of the cliff coming. So yeah, I mean, they're all, I like all these guys, and it's kind of just how you want to build your roster. And do you want like the WRC plus, I like to build around WRC plus, OPS, WRC plus, WOBA, all that stuff. Like the main like hitting stat is highly correlated to the counting stats, highly correlated to fantasy value. So like having a Corey Seager is very good, although it's only four categories instead of five categories in typical 5x5. It's still like you've got a huge base. That's really great. Like the Vlad Guerrero's great base. Miguel Cabrera used to be like that. Great base. And it's just how you want to build your roster. So if you want the speed, you got the CJ Abrams, Trey Turner. If you want just all around fantasy value, Mookie Betts, Corey Seager. So I don't know. I talked around in circles there. I like them all. It's kind of an age versus
sure.
Now, et cetera.
Yeah, no, I think that makes sense 100%. Let's wrap up the show on this last player here. Geraldo Perdomo had a breakout season in 2025. I wrote 2024 here. Excuse me. In 2025, Dylan, do you think that he can repeat his performance again next year? Is it possible?
I mean, I think you'll get close. I think there's just going to be regression. He hit 290 with a 389 on base percentage. His WRC plus, his major league career average was like 100, and he did 138 last year. He had 720 plate appearances. Like just that plate appearance number is going to come down, I'm sure. But he's a makeup guy. The Diamondbacks really like him. They signed him to an extension. He hits near the top of the order. He was 7 WAR last year. Like he's going to get the playing time. He's going to hit the top of the order. He's not going to get benched or anything like that. So he went 20-27 last year, 20 home runs, 27 stolen bases with that triple slash I was talking about, 300, 400 basically. So projections have him coming down to like 15-23. I think it's, I might take the over on that. Maybe 15 home runs is right, but I think he'll steal more bases. But if you want batting average, on base percentage, like this is a guy to take. He's going in the 6th round in redraft right now. And I mean, that's a good value. I'm taking him there in 6. I'm kind of building. I'm missing out on the Witts and the Dela Cruzes and the Hendersons in DCs right now. And I'm taking the Perdomos. He gives you the average. He gives you the stolen bases, but you know, gives you an opportunity to take like the Scoobles or like the Vlads up front, and then like settling for Perdomo in the 6th is not that much of a downgrade. So I think he's great value in DCs. I think he's going to be very good in 2026, and he's 25 years old. So like he's great in Dynasty too. So he's right up there in the conversation.
Let me ask you another question here. Actually, we'll wrap it up on this. Give me a sleeper, Dylan, that you're going to be targeting in leagues in 2026.
Sleeper. Who did I write? Oh, that's who I wrote. I have Ezekiel Tovar as my sleeper. He in his age 22 season, I mentioned this in the blurb, he hit 26 home runs with a 270 batting average at age 22 while playing like excellent shortstop defense. So because he plays in Coors, the BABIP's going to be high. So that batting average is always going to be doing well. if he continues playing good shortstop, he's going to have a high floor. He had a bit of a down year last year, but that was when he was 23. So like he's got a huge upside still ahead of him. I think the Rockies as an organization, and this is just me talking, is kind of on the upswing. I think they, you know, they're making some interesting hires in their front office. I kind of think that Tovar is being slept on right now. He's going in like the 17th round, which is way too low. So I think for value in 2026, he is good value. And then for Dynasty League, because he's going to be in his age 24 season playing for the Rockies, playing shortstop for the Rockies, hitting at the top of the order, I think he's excellent too. He's not the greatest in OBP leagues, but he should have a 270-ish batting average for a while now.
Yeah, I like that one a lot. I think that, you know, it could be pretty valuable and a good suggestion, you know. Can't hate on that at all. I'm going to go out there and I'm going to throw out Colt Emerson, all right? Little less risky, even if he doesn't get up to the big leagues this year until late. A little bit less risky than Tovar, of course. I think he really turned a corner last year. I think that the price is relatively high, but maybe the market hasn't fully caught up to what he can be. Seattle isn't the greatest landing spot for hitters. I understand that 100%. So there is some of that. Like you have to realize that the overall slash line is probably going to get tampered down a little bit just because of the park. That's not to say guys haven't been successful there before. He does have a really good balance of plate skills, approach, power. It all started to show up last year. I wrote about it a little bit in the blurb. But from June 1st on, there was a swing change that took place in late May. 306, 404, 508. He did reach AAA by the end of the season. One of their top players and a guy that I think if he's hitting in the PCL for the first 2 months of the year, first month and a half, and any part of the Seattle offense, particularly the infield, is struggling, there's a real chance that Colt Emerson does get called up and, you know, is productive and hitting in the middle of that lineup, hitting for average, getting on base, hitting for some power, giving you some counting stats. He could be a really, really exciting one. I think right now is probably a time to trade for Emerson. So, no, he's a top prospect, a little bit different from a bounce back like a Tovar. But I think that, you know, I don't think the market is fully necessarily adjusted yet to what he can be. So, Dylan, that's our show. Do you have any other thoughts on this very, very deep shortstop group, top 60 shortstops?
I think the Colt Emerson, just one final button on the Colt Emerson talk, is that he is a year younger than Kevin McGonigal, and his in-zone contact was better last year, 87% versus 86%, and his 90th percentile exit velocity is basically the same, 105 for Colt Emerson, 105.3 for McGonigal. And so, you know, JJ put out that article about how McGonigal is like in the top of multiple categories, and Emerson's right there too. He chases a bit more, he doesn't barrel as much, but it's only like a few percentage points difference, and he's a year younger. So you're saying the market hasn't caught up. I think you're right on there, because you know, he came into the season with a whole bunch of buzz, Colt Emerson did, and he had a bit of a slow start, like you said. It was kind of a down year from the expectations. He was, you know, some people were having him in like the top 10, top 20 prospects. So I think that, you know, the market has kind of cooled on him. And I think maybe, just like you said, it's a, that's a mistake by the market. So yeah, final thoughts on the shortstops. Very, very deep. I mean, I just said Tovar is a sleeper and we have him like ranked 31. So that just kind of a testament to how deep the shortstop pool is. A guy who had 26 home runs, hit 270 as a 22-year-old playing, you know, 99th percentile defense, is ranked 30 in a dynasty startup, and he plays in Coors. So just a testament to how deep the shortstops are. Matt Eddy wrote an article about like an outsider's view to, you know, winning dynasty leagues, and he says, like, focus on shortstops. You touched on it at the beginning of this podcast. Shortstops have a long runway defensively. They get moved around. They're starting at the top of the spectrum. And so like that just extends their career because they can move to second, they can move to center field, they can move to third base. So yeah, you could do, you can do a lot worse than starting with a bunch of shortstops in your dynasty startup.
I think you are correct, and I think that's a good note to end this shortstop podcast on. This has been the Baseball America Fantasy Podcast. I'm Jeff. He's Dylan. Thanks for listening. Thanks for watching. We'll be back next week.
Cheers.